Good morning. I'm very pleased to to participate in this, I think, exciting symposium. I think it's certainly fair to say from the presentations that you'll hear today that place matters. The subject of place and health has become a major focus of attention in public health, and I think this is certainly the case with regard to the study and promotion of healthy aging. There's also a growing body of research on the association between the neighborhood environment and measures of mobility in older populations. Now, we define mobility. It's one of those terms, it's everywhere, but how to define it? One definition would be human movement in all of its forms that occurs in different settings as part of everyday life. And examples include the simple act of walking to driving and the use of passenger transport. Those of us in the Healthy Aging Network are beginning to focus on mobility as a major area of interest and are beginning to think about the whole issue of integrated mobility. Just as we try to promote integrated healthcare, we should also think of integrated mobility, rather than moving beyond the categories of mobility to begin to think about mobility as a generic and think about actual patterns of mobility. That's another story, though, and certainly not something that I can talk about in the next 15 minutes. What I would like to do today is talk about the policy implications of this relationship between the environment on the one hand and mobility on the other. Mobility, again, being so important because it's related to a variety of different health outcomes. To that end, my objectives are today are to briefly review and evaluate some of the current research that is ongoing, and I'll focus of the various topics in mobility, I'll focus on walking because I think it's one of the most important and has been the subject of a number of different projects. And I will look at different types of policy implications under the heading of environmental modification on the one hand, what we're very used to thinking about, but then the other, environmental adaptation, which I think has a lot of merit, and it's something that we haven't, I think, to date, given enough attention to. So, with regard to the work in this area, looking at the environmental correlates of walking, there are some excellent reviews in this area, and I list all of these full references at the end, and you're certainly welcome to contact me for these slides. I think there are four basic areas that have been addressed, and Kathy certainly has talked about several of them in her presentation. There's work dealing with land use patterns, and we know that older residents of mixed-use communities are more likely to walk than residents of single-use or residential areas. There's also evidence showing a relationship between walking destinations and the act of walking, not surprisingly, but proximity to particular destinations encourage walking among older adults. Some of those destinations include grocery stores, convenience stores, parks, open spaces, and post offices. And then also housing and population density. And think again of the thought that older adults living in areas of higher density, often characterized by a grid street pattern and shorter block length, are more likely to walk than older adults in areas of lower density, areas characterized by more of a serpentine type of street pattern. And then what has really been shown, I think, to be the most consistent finding is perceived safety. Older adults who perceive their neighborhoods as safe are more likely to walk than those who view their neighborhoods as unsafe. I think what we've found, however, is despite the fact that this research is very compelling and thought-provoking, that there are relatively few studies that are based on longitudinal assessment. And I think for that reason, we currently have a limited evidence base for practices and policies in this area. But does that mean because we lack this longitudinal database that policies and practices are not being proposed? Well, of course not. These policies and practices are being proposed almost independently of that research base. As you heard from Kathy's presentation, there are a number of practices and policies in this particular area. So despite the limited evidence base, these policies and practices are being proposed. So what I would recommend and what I'd like to begin to do today in a relatively short amount of time is to think about the relationship between research on the one hand and these programs and practices on the other, and to approach it by expanding how we think about environmental interventions and practices and policies, and to consider, as I indicated earlier, two areas, environmental modification on the one hand and environmental adaptation on the other. I think these two areas of practice and policy are not mutually exclusive, but each offers, I think, some unique opportunities as we begin to move in this particular area. Our objective being the enhancement of health and well-being and healthy aging. So what is environmental modification? Well, this is something that when we think about environmental interventions, it's what we tend to think of first. There's almost in articles that many of us have read and even some of us have written in this area looking at environmental correlates of walking, there's the obligatory paragraph at the end that says, well, this research will be useful for redesigning zoning patterns for particular communities, which is no doubt the case, but that's a very invasive, and I don't mean that in a negative sense, but a very time-consuming and labor-intensive process. But modification, and we'll talk a little bit more about that, environmental modification refers to environmental elements, modifications to environmental elements to enhance, in this case, mobility among older adults. The modifications can vary in scope from the length of a signal time for pedestrian crossing to sidewalk repair to modification of the illumination level, light illumination level of a street to infill developments and zoning changes. Why is this appealing? Well, it makes sense. It has face validity. If environmental factors are in fact impeding mobility, well, one strategy is to remove those barriers and other stressors to enhance mobility. It's also feasible. I mean, based on Kathy's presentation, we heard about all of the various organizations that are moving in this area. We're concerned about health, but there are other people who are interested in making modifications to the environment, which may not directly relate to health. There's what has been happening and what can continue to happen is alliances between these various groups. And again, we're interested in older folks in this particular session, but we're talking about public space. So we have to take into account how it influences other population groups. And those groups that we might align ourselves with have that interest. There's also environmental adaptation, and I think we haven't not given sufficient attention to this. And this would be linking older adults to the best that the environment has to offer. And one example would be safe walking routes. We're not changing the environment, but we're providing maps, perhaps, to show people how they can maneuver through a particular geographic area to obtain goods and services. It too has face validity. It makes sense. It provides a safe and effective path in this case. We're not removing barriers necessarily, but we're providing a safe and effective path to adapt to existing barriers and stressors. It's also feasible. There's evidence to suggest that older adults can use, for example, environmental audits as part of a community process to identify the areas that are safe. And as I indicated earlier, the one thing that we have found, I think, and the one consistent finding across the cross-sectional studies, and even among the few longitudinal studies in this area, is that perceived safety is associated with walking currently and in the future. It's also possible to establish alliances, which enhances its feasibility, with other groups. For example, if you're thinking again about safe walking routes, alliances could be struck by business owners whose businesses happen to be along the routes of these pathways. We know enough about the relationship between foot traffic and spontaneous purchases in the economics area to suggest that this may, the safe walking routes may have added benefit, which is something that we should think about as we move in this particular area. And then let's talk about efficiency and effectiveness. The implementation of a walking map may be less time and labor intensive than would be the case for actually modifying an environment, as important as that might be. And also, it may be possible with something such as a walking map to develop effective public health and clinical interventions. At least we're better able to make that assessment. I'm talking, you know, we could talk about public health interventions in which we introduce walking maps, for example, and to see to what extent it affects walking in a particular area, perhaps compared to an area that did not receive the maps. But also it has the potential for being incorporated into a clinical intervention. So as part of discharge planning, for example, for older person diagnosed and treated for a particular condition, if physical exercise is part of the protocol for that discharge plan, it might be that we could develop an intervention strategy provide this map and to actually see if there's a better course of disease, better rehabilitation outcome than would be the case without it. So I think there are a variety of possibilities. And there might be the possibility of actually developing community-based trials in this area, something that would be far more difficult if we're talking about something like an environmental modification. And the environmental adaptation approach might actually, by developing this evidence base, might serve to stimulate the more effective development of environmental modification. There are obviously concerns. There's always, the one question that we have to ask is, well, if we pursue environmental adaptation, is this simply a case of looking for the keys under the streetlight? Not because we thought we lost the streets there, or it's the best place to look for keys, but because the light's better there. So we have to be very careful in pursuing this line of this particular strategy, that we're not doing it simply because it's expedient and it's easier to do. And we should never be in a position, for example, to recommend, and that's why I think these can occur concurrently, we should never be in a position to recommend an environmental adaptation as a substitute for environmental modification, because there are certainly some neighborhoods, and certainly as we are considering the issue of social justice at this particular meeting, there are certain neighborhoods that don't have much to recommend, and it would be hard to find a map of the safe places to walk through those neighborhoods, and we have to think about that. So, final thoughts. This is a very, very exciting area of the consideration of place and health and mobility in older populations, especially when we consider it within the broader ecological framework. And that, as according to the IOM, an ecologic model is a model that assumes that patterns of health and well-being are due to a dynamic interplay of biological, behavioral, environmental factors that play out over the life course of individuals, families, neighborhoods, and communities. You can see that I say that a lot in my classes, so I have it burned into my mind. But I think when we think about this topic of place, it's very compelling and exciting. But I think we need to think of it in that broader context. So there's a lot of exciting work to be done. It's back to the future in a way. In the early 1900s, the people who did city planning and the people who did public health were often the same people. And we, those two groups have went their separate ways. And now we're at this point in history of this very exciting convergence of environmental design and public health. And this represents one of those areas. But I think there are a lot of challenges. And I think that we need to think more creatively about what environmental intervention implies. And I think we need to expand beyond the idea of modifying the environment initially, as important as that is, to think about other strategies such as adaptation. And I think by doing so, I think we'll really be able to advance this particular agenda. So I want to thank you. These slides are available, and I really do sincerely recommend ask for your comments and suggestions. There's so many issues to consider. What do we even consider to be evidence in this particular area? All very important. These are some of the full references. And again, I want to thank the CDC Healthy Aging Network for its support. Thank you.